I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this special Baby Bites episode. I'm here in the studio with Jamie.
Hiya.
Hi, Jay.
Hello.
We're just going to dispense with the normal fluff that we insert and get straight to the point. The reason we're doing this is because one of the things that I think is quite important when you become a parent, obviously, is your child.
I think that's the number one in most important thing when you become a parent.
And the sort of health and safety of your child, right?
Yeah.
But lots of parents, I think it's fair to say, don't really have any understanding or knowledge about sort of first aid techniques and stuff. Mm. Have you done a first aid?
No. Course? And every time I feed Matilda something that is potentially choke-inducing, I always think, I should know how to dislodge this if this gets stuck.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
And presumably you've had quite a few occasions already where she started coughing and you're like, uh-oh.
But no, it's funnier. It's more funny than it is scary because the faces she pulls is quite funny. She doesn't eat that bigger stuff, but yeah, like a little bit of butternut squash or something. Do you know what I mean? Goes down the wrong way. But I kind of thought we should have done one. We were going to do one, but then for whatever reason just didn't. But you've done one, right?
Yeah, I have. And a funny story, in fact.
Okay.
Which could work, you know, as a sort of introduction as well to our guest for the podcast, which is that we did the NCT class as you did, and someone I think suggested in our class that might be a good idea, and the NCT instructor that we had said, I actually know someone who runs classes, and I think I probably like you, like, I don't think it would have occurred to me to do it, and there was part of me as well that was like, should we not do it? But then I was like, if we don't do it, like everyone's doing it now, we're going to look like really bad parents. So we signed up for it.
Yeah.
And then it was in like one of the NCT people's houses, and we turned up for it, and the first aid instructor arrived, and it was an old friend from university, Sarah,
no,
who is our guest for today, Sarah Conn.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
So you guys went to university?
We did.
Oh, okay.
Sussex University many years ago. And I don't think we'd probably seen each other for, what, like 17 years, something like that? Probably.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right, yeah.
So just to kind of give more of an introduction to Sarah and sort of sell her, talk her up a bit.
Not that she needs talking up, but...
Well, no, I mean, her reputation precedes her, obviously. So Sarah runs her own kind of business, which focuses on training parents in first aid techniques called early bird first aid.
That's right.
And you're also a mum of three boys.
I am now. Yeah, the youngest is 8 months, and then I've got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. So,
it's quite a lot that you're juggling there.
Yes.
But you've got a couple of assistants now that help you.
I have. In the last year or so, I've taken on two other instructors. So now it's not just me teaching courses, which makes it a bit easier. So I do quite a lot of the admin and a bit of the teaching as well.
Right.
So, yeah.
So it sounds like it's like quite a kind of, you know, there's a lot of interest in it if your business is obviously growing.
Well, yeah, I focus mainly on doing the paediatric first aid, so courses for parents like yourselves. And I honestly think, you know, if you've got kids, it is a really good thing to do, just to give you a bit of confidence so you would know what to do if your child starts choking, you know, or if they burn themselves or they bump their head, that kind of thing. It's really just about confidence, I think. But so, yeah, I do lots of two, three-hour courses focusing on basic first aid for babies and children.
Okay.
And then some longer courses too, but that's really where the focus is.
I guess another thing as well is just not, you know, the temptation to rush your kid to A&E with the smallest thing that happens to them is kind of, and you're kind of wasting NHS time and resource and also your own time spending sort of hours in queues in waiting rooms and that. Whereas if you can deal with it yourself...
It makes your life easier and you're not sitting around the hospital, you know, just to be sent home sort of 3 hours later. No, definitely. I think, you know, it is really about confidence and knowing that you can cope with it yourselves. And thankfully, the really serious stuff doesn't happen that often, but it's about 40% of parents that see a child choke at some point, and less than half of those parents know what to do in that situation. So just learning a basic skill can give you the confidence to deal with the problem before it becomes an issue. And that's why, you know, doing some training is a really good idea.
See, 40%, that's... quite high, isn't it?
Yeah. What are the other sort of common things that you might encounter?
Well, I mean, bumps and bruises, you know, are very common. And I think, I don't know if you guys have seen that yet. I mean, I remember the first time my eldest was running along and he tripped and caught his head on the side of a table leg. And pretty much instantly an egg appeared on his head and he cried. And I grabbed a bag of frozen peas out of the freezer, wrapped it in a tea towel and then made him sit for 10 minutes with the peas on his head. And actually for him, that was probably worse than the bump itself. But then it's knowing what to look for afterwards. So I didn't take him to A&E because he acted completely normally. He didn't vomit, he wasn't sleepy or lethargic, and he just went and played and was quite happy. But those are the kind of things you're looking for. If they seem dizzy or lethargic when you don't expect them to be, if they vomit, that sort of thing, a change in behavior, if they seem quieter than they usually would, then you would take them to A&E. And I think if you don't know what you're looking for, you probably think, oh, they bumped their head, straight to A&E. And obviously you do want to err on the side of caution, but you know, you have to have a bit of confidence in yourself and trust your instincts too. And you know, you get to know your children really well, so you know, if you feel something's not right, it probably isn't right. But it's just knowing what to look for as well.
I feel like just like hearing you kind of talk about some of the things, and like we haven't even got to the really horrible stuff
yet. The nitty gritty.
But like one of the things I imagine like might put people off is just because it's so horrible to think about that you just like, I'd rather just not even.
I know. I do sometimes feel like I'm just the bearer of bad news, and you arrive and you get this really nice group of people that are excited about having their babies, and then you sort of sit there.
Your child's going to die.
Yeah, exactly.
When your child is electrocuted, this is what you need to do.
And you see their faces dropping throughout the session and you just think, oh no, what have I done to them Tuesday evening? But actually, the chances are you probably won't need to use these things. Yeah. And as I said, it's about having the confidence to know what to do if you are put in a position where you can stop it from becoming an emergency, particularly with things like choking. If you know what to do, it's over and done within about 10 seconds. And I've had a few choking incidents myself. And actually, I set the business up as a result of dealing with the choking incident with my first son, because he started choking when I was on maternity leave weaning him. And I was already a first aid instructor, so I knew exactly what to do. And then afterwards, I was a little bit shaken up by it. And I thought, would other parents know what to do? And then my NCT group asked me to teach a course for them. And then I did a course for a friend of theirs. And then by the time I was ready to go back to work, I was doing kind of three courses a week. And my husband said, why are you going back to work? And he did my website and the branding and stuff. And so the business started there. So, you know, with particularly things like choking, you can solve it yourself without it becoming serious. But if you don't know what to do and you panic, that's where things, you know, can go wrong. So
what should you do then?
So first thing you do, just, well, gagging's normal. And you've probably all seen that when you're weaning your babies, they do gag. And coughing's normal as well. And you've probably all felt that sensation where you feel like something goes down the wrong way and you cough and splutter and it comes out and that's the end of it. So coughing's the body's natural way of expelling anything that comes into contact with the airway. And actually, if you're sitting next to someone at the dinner table and they start coughing, instinctively, you kind of feel like you should whack them on the back.
Yeah.
And actually, that's not very helpful.
Oh, right,
you're much better off just letting them cough out themselves. course.
I do that all the time to Matilda. Also. I just hit her on the back and go, there, she's fine.
Well, if she's coughing normally, then she's fine.
Yeah.
It's where either the coughing becomes weak or if there's no sound at all, that's where you need to do something about it.
Right. See, that just makes me tense up.
Well, you've done a first aid course, though.
That's
Seth,
true,
so you know what to do.
But well, that's the thing. I do kind of know what to do. I do remember that bit. I remember, I think... Is it right you would like lean them forward?
Yeah, you get the head down. So you want the head down towards the floor and then you've got gravity working with you. And hopefully you just turn them upside down. You support their body on your forearm, get the head low, and hopefully it just comes straight out and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And if not, then you use the heel of the hand between the shoulder blades and you do 5 firm back blows and that hopefully forces the obstruction out of the airway. And then if that doesn't work, then you turn them over and you do 5 chest thrusts where you put your 2 fingers in the centre of the sternum and you do 5 sharp chest thrusts. And that's for an under 1-year-old. For an
so
over
just,
1-year-old.
Sorry, so with the fingers, so it's not like a proper double-handed
no, two
thing
fingers,
you see, right?
Yeah.
Just 2 fingers.
Yeah, in the centre of the breastbone.
Right, okay.
But that's just for an under 1-year-old. Once they're over 1-year-old, you always do the 5 back blows regardless of their age. So whether they're 6 months, 6 years, 60, you start with 5 back blows.
Right.
But once they're over 1-year-old, you do an abdominal thrust instead. Or the Heimlich manoeuvre. You've probably seen it done on Mrs. Doubtfire or some...
I have seen it done on Mrs. Doubtfire.
So, yeah, that kind of thing.
I can't remember if this had happened when we did our class, but like, did Dr. Heimlich actually get to use his
maneuver? Yeah, I think
maneuver?
He was still, I don't think he'd used it at that point.
No.
Because I usually tell that story on the course.
Right, maybe
that
it was you
now.
That, right, okay.
Oh, did I tell you? Maybe I told you that.
See,
maybe it had happened.
Now we know where Seth gets all his his witty anecdotes
his
from.
I'm very well known for my sort of
stories about Heimlich. Yeah. Yeah, no,
so what's the story about
Heimlich.
Mr. Heimlich, Dr. Heimlich, should I say? He just never got to use
No, he did. He, right. At the age of 92, I think it was, he finally got to use his abdominal thrust, or the Heimlich manoeuvre, as it's called, on someone that was choking in a restaurant.
Can you imagine his face lighting up as he hears this going on, him kicking tables down to get to the person before anyone else
imagine
does.
If you were that person who was choking.
Yeah.
You were like, this is like this, it's actually brilliant. Like, I'm so glad that I'm choking because otherwise this anecdote would never have fallen
into my lap. That's it.
They've
got a real story to tell.
Yeah. Okay,
but thankfully it did work and he did save them. And sadly for him, he died, I think, about a month later. But
he choking on a prawn.
No, I think it was old age. But I think he felt his work, you know, at least he knew his work was done and that, you know, it did work. And actually, the Heimlich manoeuvres probably saved countless lives, really. It is a very useful thing. We call it the abdominal thrust, I think, because of copyright.
Right, okay. So how would you go about an abdominal thrust then? What's the best technique?
So basically, you find the belly button and then 2 fingers above the belly button, below the line of the rib cage, you've got a soft spot there, so your solar plexus, you can feel it on yourselves.
All right, I'm gonna feel, yep.
Yeah. Don't push too hard because you will wind yourself. You basically make a fist with your hand and you put the knuckle of the thumb into that soft spot, and then you put the other hand over the front, lock your elbows outwards, and you pull inwards and upwards. So you're coming up underneath the rib cage. It's almost like a scoop up underneath the rib cage, and that forces the diaphragm up, which forces the air out the lungs and hopefully takes the object with it.
Can you do it on yourself?
People quite often ask that on first aid courses. Apparently, there are some courses where people have been taught to do it on the edge of a chair or something if they're on their own. That isn't something we would teach on a first aid course for early bird first aid. Not advisable, really. Go and find help. Don't go to somewhere where there isn't anyone else around. So don't take yourself off to the loo if you start choking and you're a bit embarrassed, because then if you pass out in the loo, there's no one there to help you. So you know, I think it's quite obvious if someone starts choking, they usually hold their throat, you know, if they're old enough to understand, they go very red or purple. And if you see that, and if it's someone you don't know, it's a good idea to ask permission to help, actually, before you go charging over and start whacking them on the back. But
yeah, but they can't respond, can they, with that?
Well, nod of the head will do.
Yeah,
are you choking?
True,
can I help? Nod of the head. Okay. And that way you've covered yourself by good Samaritan laws, so you're not going to get into trouble for manhandling them. But to be fair, we don't really have much of a suing culture in the UK.
No,
that's true.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
There are other countries where, you know, that people do get into...
You just leave them to die because you're too... Yeah, but that, yeah, it happens in all kinds of cases.
I have heard stories. There was a story in America a few years ago about someone choking in a restaurant, someone else going and doing an abdominal thrust, cracking a rib, saving his life and getting taken to court for it afterwards.
Can you imagine? That's so...
But thankfully, we don't have that.
Ungrateful, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but probably the medical costs probably were higher, like for the cracked ribs.
Than the funeral costs.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so you'd only do that abdominal thrust on a 1 year old.
Over 1 year old, yeah. Yeah. So under 1 year old, 5 back blows, 5 chest thrusts using 2 fingers in the center mm-hmm. of the sternum. And then over 1 year old, 5 back blows, 5 abdominal thrusts.
Okay, that's good. I should be writing this down, and I'm not.
And actually, in a few weeks' time, I'll have some videos on my website, so you could be able to go to the website and watch these training videos of what you need to do.
And what's your website?
Baby. It's www.earlybirdfirstaid.com, all one word.
Snappy.
Other things are things like burns. And a lot of, when it comes to first aid, a lot of it is common sense. And, you know, some things you may already know that you've picked up along the way. But I think it is about trusting your judgment and your sort of instincts and knowing what to do. So there are certain things you can do to try and avoid accidents at home. So things like with burns, try and remember to use the back burners on your hob. So that it's further away from little hands, and turn pan handles back the other way so they can't reach up and pull a pan of boiling water over themselves.
I always do that anyway because I don't trust myself.
Yeah, well, so it's good. Yeah. You get into good habits and that can help to prevent accidents. Things like hot drinks are the biggest culprit with burns with babies and small children in the home. And 15 minutes after you boiled the kettle and made a drink, it's still hot enough to scald a child. So just be wary of that.
Yeah.
And if you've got friends that come round that haven't got children, they put their steaming hot cup of tea down.
Oh, we don't have friends who come round that don't have children. We just ban them from the place now. Yeah. They disgust me.
That will get in trouble.
That's
mate,
true,
again.
Actually. I'm joking.
But yeah, so things like that can help to reduce the risk of accidents. And with baths, always put the cold water in first. If you haven't got a mixer tap on your bath, always put the cold water in first. So if the toddler climbs into the bath before you finish running it, it's not steaming hot water.
Right,
cold.
Yeah. That's so, a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And often people think, I have got a mixer tap, so it doesn't matter to me. But actually, accidents are much more likely to happen when you're not in your own home. So if you're on holiday in an Airbnb or something and they haven't got a mixer tap, bear that in mind.
Oh, that's such good advice. Yeah. I would not have thought of that. I guess those are like preventatives rather than...
That's true.
You know, and you were saying before we came here that you deal a lot on teaching people about how to prevent accidents happening in the home as well as sort of dealing with it when it does happen. So what's the kind of, what would you say is the best, along with the sort of scenario you just gave there, for the common, I was going to say work area, common living areas. Yeah. How would you avoid the main sort of injuries that you see?
Things like anchoring your TV to the wall. So with flat screen TVs, making
that's
sure they're attached to the wall.
Because
once your babies can crawl, they'll crawl over to the TV stand and pull themselves up, and it's loud and bright and it's quite, you know, attractive to them. So if they start bashing on it and it falls on top of them, then obviously that can be quite serious. So attach those to the wall. Heavy furniture as well can cause problems. So if you've got a toddler pulling themselves up on a bookshelf and the whole thing collapses on top of them, that can be really serious as well. So... those sorts of things are a
plug
good
sockets
idea.
I imagine
plug sockets, it is really disconcerting seeing them sticking their fingers in plug sockets, but actually unless the plug socket is faulty they can't electrocute themselves.
Well,
so
good.
You can get covers to cover the plug sockets,
so those are basically useless then.
You don't really need them. And funnily enough, my husband was saying to me the other night, because our 8-month-old started doing exactly that, and it does sort of freak you out when you see it, but actually I was saying to him, unless they stick 3 fingers in, you know, exactly the same time,
because it's the top one opens up the bottom too, doesn't it? That's the only use of the top.
Top
hole. That kind of, that's why the top thing on a plug is plastic and the bottom two are metal. It's knowledge for you,
that's right. Very good.
Yep.
So
thank
there you.
You
know. So you can get those if you want them, but they're not essential.
Okay. That's good. Also good to know. People don't waste your money on those.
Or let's start a business selling those things because people buy them without needing them. Now, what other business?
Well, they only cost about like 20p. No,
Let's not do that. Let's not do that. Yeah. Okay.
But, what about a drawer or like cupboard?
Yeah,
drawer,
that's a good, because like I just bought a load of them from IKEA for like 20 quid.
Ooh, you got ripped off, mate.
No, I bought quite a few. Right, I bought quite a few. For like the cupboards under the sink and stuff like that.
See, that's the main one. That's what I would say. So in terms of baby proofing, you can, you know, it's down to personal choice how much you do, and some people will literally wrap their house up in cotton wool, and other people won't do it anymore. But you know, it's up to you how far you go. But I would say cupboard under the sink, particularly if you've got a toddler that empties cupboards, get a safety catch for that, because at least it slows them down. And things like dishwasher tablets that you might keep in that cupboard under the sink, that's the sort of thing they see in A&E with children ingesting, you know, chemicals, because it looks like a sweet, it looks like it's got a Smartie in the middle. They take it out and swallow it. So if you can prevent that kind of thing, again, obviously it's better than having to deal with it. And washing machine capsules as well, that's another one. Medicines too, keeping medicines out of reach, that's another big one that they have. But
most people do that though, isn't it? Like,
chemicals out of reach too, and just keeping things in the right place can go a long way to avoiding accidents at home. I think one of the worst stories I heard on course I did not long ago was a lady in a sleep deprived moment of insanity in the middle of the night put super glue in her baby's eye.
Oh my god.
Well, the super glue and the eye drops were both in her bedside table, and she, in the sort of haze of the middle of the night, she'd gone to get the eye drops, and in her defense she said she didn't know the super glue was in there because her husband had been fixing a shelf in the bedroom and had put it in there afterwards. But she put super glue in the baby's eye, and thankfully the baby was okay and the baby's eye was okay. But they told her in the hospital it wasn't the first time they'd seen it, which actually I thought was almost more shocking than the fact that she'd done it was that she's not alone and other people have done that too. So it's a really good example of why it is important to keep things in the right place.
I'm getting rid of the super glue in my, because I don't trust myself, let alone anyone else with that. I'll get it's gone, that's it.
So,
not that I use eye drops.
Or super glue, perhaps.
No.
So both completely.
Yeah, anyway. Anyway.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Another thing, like, because obviously families go on holiday and things like that, like swimming pools, obviously that can be seen, that can be a potential death trap. So what would you say
what was that accent?
You know, obviously Watchdog back in the day with the Scottish, everything was a potential death trap.
Right, okay.
Anyway, Karen. swimming pools, like if your, you know, kid goes under for a little bit too long, comes up, sort of you think they might be drowning, that kind of thing. What would you do?
So, yeah, I mean, obviously don't leave children unattended in the swimming pool, particularly if they can't swim, even if they can swim.
Or even in the bath.
Yeah, or even in the bath.
Oh, that scares the hell out of me so much.
Don't leave babies unattended in the bath.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think when they're very little, there's no temptation to, but if they're sitting, playing quite happily, you sort of think, oh, I'll go and get the towel from the other room. If you did come in and they were face down in the bath, you lift them out of the bath with the head down, if possible, and hopefully they're coughing and spluttering and you feel awful and never do it again. And if they're not, then you get them straight down onto the floor, open the airway, check for breathing, and you'd start CPR. So you start with 5 rescue breaths and then 30 chest compressions to 2 breaths, 32. And again, you can learn that on early bird first aid course.
That's handy. Is it true? Is it like you do it to the rhythm of what tune is it? Is it Staying Alive?
Yeah, so Vinnie Jones's ad campaign was Staying Alive.
That was it.
I always use Nelly the Elephant. Nelly the Elephant is 15 beats. So if you do 2 rounds of Nelly the Elephant and then 2 breaths, that's your 30 to 2.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah. Staying Alive, just because, you know.
Yeah.
It worked. The title works.
That's true. It's easy to remember, Yeah.
They say that actually when someone is drowning, that it's not always that obvious. I think you imagine that they will be shouting for help and waving their arms and stuff. But actually, if someone is really drowning, they're usually at eye level and they're not usually making a lot of splashing because they're pushing, you know, all their energy is going on trying to keep their mouth above water. So, you know, it's not always going to be someone that's making a lot of noise and shouting for help. So just always keep your eyes open. You know, if you're in a swimming pool with lots of kids around, because sometimes it can be when there are lots of adults around and someone assumes someone else is watching the kid.
Yeah.
And that's when accidents do happen. But obviously, you know, pull them out as quickly as you can. If you need to use CPR, then you would. You have to think about secondary drowning too. So if you're lucky and you do revive them, you would always get them checked out afterwards because they can be affected by secondary drowning.
What's that?
It's when some water's got down into the lungs and actually they might seem completely fine afterwards, but 48 hours later, it can be fatal. It can cause an infection in the blood, which, you know, then can be fatal. So, and actually someone doesn't have to have lost consciousness to be affected by secondary drowning. So if you had a toddler that had fallen into a swimming pool and someone's fished them out and they're barely conscious and then they start coughing, water could have got down into the lungs in that situation. So even if they haven't lost consciousness, if you've had a drowning incident, you should get them checked out afterwards.
Yeah, Seth, you look a bit traumatized by all of this.
Yeah. No, well, I'm also kind of, it was concerning me that I definitely heard this all before and most of it I don't remember. So
not that that's an endorsement of your course. I think that says more about Seth than it does about your course.
No, yeah. Well, I think it says,
was a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Almost.
It would have been about 15 or 16 months ago. It was okay, just before Eliza was born.
But do you know what? Like, you think you've forgotten it, but it's the kind of thing that when it happens, I reckon,
do you think,
there's a part of your brain which just goes, right,
I know
what to
do. Techniques, you're not using them. You know, things like CPR, you're not using on a regular basis, so you probably would forget it. And that's why it's good to refresh your skills on that first day course. But I think some of the general knowledge, you probably would know. Things like, you know, what to do if you're dealing with burns, that sort of thing. Hopefully that's the kind of thing that does stick in your head.
What do you do with burns?
So if you are dealing with a burn, the most important thing is to get the burn area under cold running water for at least 10 minutes. And that takes the heat out of the burn. So once you've done that, then you cover it with something clean. And what they recommend in A&E is cling film.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, and often burns will happen in and around the kitchen. So you've got cling film available. You lay it loosely over the burn area and that helps to prevent against infection.
Is that that's the only, because it's clean and it's kind
of... Yeah, exactly. And the other advantage is that when the professionals assess the burn, they can do it through the cling film. They don't have to take it off first. So
presumably, like if you use like a tea towel or something, that's going to stick as well.
Well, you can use a clean flat piece of cotton, like a pillowcase or a tea towel, but as long as it's not fluffy.
You don't want to use
the towel. Yeah, you don't want any fibres to get into the broken skin. So, but at least 10 minutes cold running water, cover it with something clean.
Tin foil?
No, tin foil. Plastic bag. You could use plastic bag if you didn't have
clean. But tin foil is clean, right?
Yeah, but it could trap, you know, if there's any heat left. I wouldn't advise.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
Although you should have taken the heat out by that point. But don't put anything else on it. So don't put... People have heard funny stories about burns. So often people say, don't you put Vaseline on it? No, because that traps the heat in. So that's why the water is the first thing you don't do. Don't put creams or Vaselines or butter or anything like that on it. Cold running water for at least 10 minutes and then cover it with something clean. And I did have a girl that contacted me quite recently that had done one of my courses. And it was in the summer, actually. And then her daughter stood on a hot coal at a barbecue. And she, basically, having done the course about a month earlier, knew exactly what to do. And she rushed her into the kitchen, got her foot under cold running water. But she said her mother-in-law that was there going, put butter on it. And her mum or someone was saying, oh, you need to put Vaseline on it or put ice on it. And she said, because she'd done the course, she knew what to do. And she had the confidence to say, actually, you're wrong. I know what I'm doing. And she got on and dealt with it and wrapped it in cling film afterwards, went to A&E, and they told her she'd done a really good job. And she contacted me to tell me that, which was...
Do you get a lot of that, people getting in touch?
Sometimes, and it's always nice when they do. Yeah, I had another person not long ago that's son choked on a 20p piece. And I think the thing about choking is, if you're feeding your child and they start choking, it's pretty obvious what's going on. If you've been out the room and you came back in and your toddler's sitting there purple in the face, not breathing, and you're thinking, what is wrong with them? You wouldn't necessarily make the connection between choking and you know, what's going on. And thankfully she did, and she picked him up, whacked him on the back, and a 20p piece came flying out. So she contacted me to tell me that as well. And I do usually say on a course, it's not only food.
Yeah.
You know, it is sort of objects in your home, and when your baby's crawling around, they can put things in their mouth as well. So, but it's something worth mentioning, because it's all about recognizing what's wrong as well. So you know, and thinking about that too. So, but yeah, it is always nice when people contact you to tell you that what you've taught them has, you know, helped. Makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. So. It must be quite a rewarding kind of profession in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly believe it is a good thing for parents to do. So it's easy for me to, you know, be passionate about that, because I do think it is a really good thing for people to do. And, you know, when that's reinforced with people coming back with stories, then that's really good. I mean, the choking's the main thing. I meet so many people that have dealt with choking incidents.
Yeah.
And actually, I think as long as you stay calm and you do what you need to do, and it is relatively instinctive as well. I think whacking them on the back is fairly instinctive.
Is it a proper whack you've got to give them? I'm just, because
it's a back blow. So okay. Yeah, you're doing it firmly. It's about the angle as well, making sure the head down and the spine straight. But you're hitting them fairly firmly. And generally what happens is you might do a bit lighter to start with. And if it's not coming out, the adrenaline's kicking in and you're doing it firmer and firmer. But, you know, it's not your full force, but you're doing it firmly. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so, I feel like I've learned something.
I definitely think I've learned, relearned something.
Relearned, yeah.
I know it's some, yeah, it's coming back to me. It's coming back to me. But maybe we should do a refresher. Do you want to do a refresher with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do a refresher. Well, I just need to do what I'm...
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you get a group of four together, I can do a private course for you.
So. Awesome. There we go. But well, there's four of us here.
Yeah.
Done. We'll take you off on that. Awesome.
So aside from doing the actual course, is there like three tips, top tips that you could give to parents who might be listening about keeping their child safe, or what to do in?
I mean, I think, you know, baby proofing for the age of your child is a good idea. So things like blind cords, make sure you don't have long loop blind cords, that kind of thing.
You're right, yeah.
Loose wires, as I said, anchor your furniture to the wall, TVs to the wall, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, watch some videos online is a good idea, because with the techniques, you can't really talk through them. You need to sort of see them. That's the best way to do it. And you can read that in a book or watch it on the TV. It's obviously not a replacement for doing it yourselves.
Yeah.
What would my other tips be? Things like when you're weaning your baby, make sure you keep food age appropriate. Don't give them anything round.
Yes, like grapes.
Exactly. Grapes are the thing you've probably heard the most bad press about. So you cut grapes up lengthways until they're at least 2 years old. But other things like, you know, large blueberries or cherry tomatoes, blackberries, that sort of thing. Keeping food age appropriate is a good idea. Try to avoid giving children food in the back of the car, because if they start choking in the back of the car, you've got to pull over before you can help them. So that slows down your response time. As they get older, get them to sit down and don't run around while they're eating, that sort of thing
right,
as well.
Yeah. Imagine, like, if I was just thinking about if you were running this course in America, you'd probably have to have a section on like bullet wounds and stuff. I don't know why that occurred to me.
Well, bleeding is something that I would often talk about on a course, and that's maybe something worth mentioning, you know, if you're dealing with cuts with glass or things right. like that.
Then, yeah.
But yeah, all bullet wounds.
Oh,
but
that's too morbid, man. Benji looks traumatized by that idea.
But direct pressure to the wound, if you're dealing with serious bleeding, is the most important thing. So apply direct pressure to the wound.
Yeah.
Okay.
And elevate the area if you can.
Okay.
God, there's a lot to take in.
Hopefully that won't. But I am actually I'm going to the States soon.
That's not,
so it could.
Yeah, but that's.
Well, but the other thing. So another thing that happens on holiday, though, is like, you know, sun exposure, like all extreme kind of sun. Is that something that you teach people to kind of avoid?
Well, I mean, being in the UK, we don't unfortunately have that much sun. So it is something people do often ask about, and then we'll talk about it. So obviously keeping small children out of direct sunlight is a good idea, making sure they're drinking lots of water so they don't get dehydrated. With babies, just making sure they've got regular wet nappies so that you know that they're not dehydrated as well.
Yeah.
And if they are dehydrated, or if they have been exposed to too much sun and are kind of showing signs of sunburn and things like that, would you treat it the way you'd treat adult sunburn?
Well, if it's, you know, if you think they're a bit dehydrated, then you give them lots of water, and you can buy electrolyte solutions, you can give them as well. You know, if you think they've got a bit of minor sunburn, then you can use after sun and things. But if you're dealing with a small baby that's been exposed to, you know, high temperatures for a prolonged period, I'd get them to hospital and get them checked out. Yeah.
Okay.
But you're talking about a more serious sort of...
If they're looking proper roasted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, if they're very red or if they've got blistered skin, and when their babies get dehydrated, they get a sunken fontanelle as well.
Yeah.
Cry without tears, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So if they're showing signs of not being well or being seriously dehydrated, yes, get them to hospital. But if you're just thinking they haven't drunk enough water, obviously give them a bit more and keep them out of direct sunlight.
Nice. Okay. Well, I think that's... Sarah, is there anything else you think we should be covering or...
I think we've probably talked about the main things. You know, I could go on all day about all the sort of miserable things that could go wrong. But I think the top things that you're thinking about as parents are probably choking, burns, head injuries, that sort of thing. And as I said, a bit of baby proofing. So think about blind cords. Don't leave plastic bags lying around. Little nappy sacks are plastic bags. Make sure they're not going to put those over their head. So a little bit of baby proofing. But a lot of it comes down to using your common sense, trusting your instincts. And as I've said, you know, do a basic... first aid course.
Do the course, guys.
Yeah, do it.
Early bird first aid.
Thanks, sir.
What's the website address again?
It's www.earlybirdfirstaid.com.
There you go.
Do it.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Jamie.
No worries.
Thanks.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.